Mavs Fans for Life podcast. I am your host, Landis Thomas, and we are joined by Ian Kayanja and Shahnavaz Makhani. We have a Christian Wood conundrum. And we'll also be talking about the overall depth on this team. Shout out to Kendra, who couldn't make this episode. We are thinking about you. So, guys, man, where do we start? The Mavs are 1-2, have close games between the Suns and the Pelicans. And then they blow out the Memphis Grizzlies, which just seems like a year ago at this point. Let's talk about the Christian Wood conundrum to start this off. Let's just go right in. I mean, we can go the Mavs rotation, how great Christian Wood is playing, and then the closing lineup. It all just goes together. Ian, I'll start with you. What's your thoughts on Christian Wood and how well he's playing, and just why is he not playing more?
Yeah, Christian Wood has been unbelievable. I mean, better than advertised in every respect of that phrase. He's a guy, I mean, he's averaging 24 points per game. He's shooting like 60-some percent from the field. And the most shocking is that he's not playing over 30 minutes a night. And that boggles my mind when there's certain guys that are, you know, playing 30-plus minutes a night and putting up zeros in the stat sheet. I'm a simple man when it comes to hoops. The name of the game is putting the ball in the basket. And we can talk about defensive rotations, offense to defense. If your second best offensive player looks unguardable, why don't you play them more? It's that simple to me. And so it's almost like a weird problem the Mavs find themselves in, because it's a self-inflicted one. It can be easily remedied by just giving Christian Wood the minutes that I feel that he's earned. You can try to tell me that he needs to be a better defender and whatnot, but if a guy can put up 25 points a night on insane efficiency, man, I think you'll still win far more basketball games than you lose by playing him more minutes, even if he's a net neutral on defense. And against the Pelicans, he was one of three Mavs players that had a positive box score plus minus. He was plus +8. The guy that starts in front of him, JaVale McGee, was at a zero, so neither positive nor negative. And the only other guys to be on that list with him was Luka and then the iffy Josh Green, which could be a function of the lineup he played with. But nonetheless, Christian Wood was a plus +8. Luka was a plus +6 tonight. And Christian Wood was a plus +8 in a game that they lost. So that tells me something. And I think he needs more minutes. There's just no excusing it at this point.
Shahnavaz, what's your thoughts on Christian Wood so far in the first three games and just the minutes he's been given?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Ian on this. I mean, I think, you know, Christian Wood is a much welcomed addition to this team. We've talked about it a lot. You know, he's everything the Mavs wanted Kristaps Porzingis to be. I think it's still early, right? It's an early sample size, you know, three games. But, you know, against three really, really good teams in Phoenix, Memphis, and New Orleans, I mean, he's averaging, like Ian said, 25 a game. He's shooting 50% from three, you know, and it's not like he's taking one or two a game. He's taking five threes a game on average. So, you know, the guy he's a great pick and pop player. He's, you know, you've seen the defensive improvements, I think, as well in the first three games, kind of at the rim. Today, even he, you know, against the Pelicans, the way he closed out on three pointers. I mean, with his length and his size, if he can defend guards that way on a regular basis, that's a really big improvement to this team. From a minute standpoint, I mean, that's the issue, right? Is the whole promise that Jason Kidd made to JaVale McGee that he's going to start the season as the starting center, and when does that time come when you replace JaVale McGee with Christian Wood? You know, Jason Kidd has talked about, you know, it's going to take 10, 15 games right before he decides on, you know, what his ultimate starting lineup is going to be. And I think now that the Mavs are 1-2, you go into another tough test against Brooklyn, who may have a bad record, but you've got two of the arguably top 15 players in the NBA on that roster. You know, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, as the Mavs progress throughout this tough stretch of the beginning of the year, when does Jason Kidd decide, hey, I've got to take advantage of getting the better offensive team out on the floor as opposed to the promise that I made to JaVale McGee?
Yeah, I even said it. I mean, not only do I want to see Christian Wood play more, I want to see him play more with Luka Doncic. Like, they're incredibly efficient together. That's what's so mind-boggling to me is this is not an issue where they don't play well together, so you kind of have to put him on the bench and stagger their minutes where one is on the court doing his thing, the other subs in, he's on the court doing his thing by himself. They actually play really good together, and they play really good without each other. So I would like to see both of them play on the court more and see some of that pick and roll, because they are a much more dynamic team, and it makes the offense more unpredictable. And that's what you need, especially it's so Luka-centric, and you kind of forcing your team to be a live and die by the three. And you see it during these games when they make the threes, they're absolutely demolishing teams. And then those teams come back when you're missing threes, or it's vice versa. You're catching up when you start to finally make those threes. And it's just very puzzling, because Christian Wood, he can score anywhere. Like, he can score in a paint. He can post up. He can shoot mid-range. He can shoot threes. He can play in pick and roll. He can play pick and pop. Play the man. I mean, you need him to play more than 30 minutes. Like Ian said, he's below 30 minutes, and he's incredibly efficient. It's just weird to me. I mean, what point do you get enough is enough, I have to make a change? Sean Navaz, I'll start with you. Where do you, if you're Jason Kidd and you know, McGee, that's your guy, how long do you give that leash where you're like, okay, this is not working, now I have to switch it up?
So I don't think it's a matter of wins and losses with Jason Kidd, especially because of the season the Mavericks had last year, right? I mean, if you remember, you know, this team was, what, 500 in January, right? The very beginning of January, and lost 12 games the rest of the year, right? I mean, and that's kind of when Jason Kidd kind of found his groove. I think this team found their defensive identity. You talk about, you know, the way that Luka started meshing with his teammates. So I don't know if it's a matter of wins and losses, but I think for Kidd, he seems to me like one of those coaches that's going to stick to his guns. So if he says he's not changing the lineup for 10 games, I think it's going to be at least until, I think it's Washington is the 10th game, if I'm not mistaken, but it's going to be around that time, you know, early November, where you're going to see Jason Kidd decide, okay, you know what, I got to start changing that. If the Mavs only have one win going into next week, I mean, I would hope he makes a change, but, you know, Landon, you touched on it, just the efficiency of Christian Wood. I mean, the Mavs, before the New Orleans game, the time that Luka and Wood were on the court together in two games is only 31 minutes, but they averaged 147.6 points per 100 possessions, which blows the top off of the offensive efficiency the Mavs had 2 years ago when they were the best offense ever in NBA history, which then got broken, of course, last year by multiple teams. But you put Doncic with a pick-and-roll big man that can also shoot the three. Christian Wood was 8 of 10 from the field tonight against the Pelicans. Knocked down all of his threes, played really good defense. I mean, the guy is, again, I've said it before, I'll say it again, he's everything they wanted Kristaps Porzingis to be. Kidd has to make a change eventually, and I think it'll come within the next week or two. I think he may stick to his guns and he may say 10 games, but there's you've got a big enough sample size at this point to realize that Christian Wood is a better option than JaVale McGee.
Ian, what's your thoughts?
At the end of the day, kid is always in the year and now second into the second year that he's been here, he's always struck me as a process over results type of guy. And I think that's why he's hung to these random, seemingly arbitrary markers of like, oh, I'll tell you what the team is like at Christmas, if you recall last year, Landon. And it's because he wants to make sure the process is sound. What happens, or at least what can be mind-boggling from our vantage point in the media, and I'm sure a lot of fans' perspective, is Kid is so process-driven that he'll stick to a process. He'll try every angle and avenue for that specific process, even though everyone in the room can see that it isn't working. It's like watching someone try to complete a puzzle and you have the last piece and you're trying to give them that piece and they keep telling you, no, 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 I'll figure it out. Will they maybe figure it out? Yeah. And then will they come to you and be like, oh, you have the last piece, can I have it? For sure. But it will take them an hour instead of them finishing in 10 minutes or 5 minutes or 2 minutes. And so what I've seen with Kid, I mean, what I've observed, especially now in this Christian Wood situation, is that he's more calmed down from his Milwaukee Bucks and Nets days, and his time in LA was important. But in him being calmed down, he's almost like non-reactive to empirical evidence that says your process isn't working. And you see it come across in his coaching when the Mavs are getting shellacked on like a 13-0 run and he doesn't call a timeout. Yeah, he says he wants players to figure it out, but also at what point is figuring it out just hurting the team? And so I think that's the balance that Kid will have to try to figure out as he continues in his coaching career here in Dallas. It's that, like, at what point are you sacrificing results for this process, but we're in a results-driven league? And at the end of the day, no one really cares about your process if you're winning.
Yeah, that's definitely a good point, especially that's a perfect segue into the next question I have for both of y'all. You said, you know, the process for winning and the two losses that they had, it came down to the wire. And Kid had the closing lineups of Luka, Spencer, Reggie, and Dorian, the usual four out of the five starters. And then he went back and forth with offense versus defense. You saw Christian Wood playing with them, and you thought, okay, this is the lineup he's about to finish. And Dorian was coming back, and we're like, we're all texting each other, okay, who's Dorian subbing in for? This is going to be very intriguing. And he subs for Christian Wood. Jason Kidd goes back to the lineup that he used with Phoenix Suns, where it's Maxi for defense. And then 3 minutes later, it was kind of too late. He put in Christian Wood and see if they could salvage a last-minute run to try to win the game. Start with Ian. What's your thoughts on the back and forth, the offense versus defense closing lineup from Kidd?
The NBA is too good to have this back and forth, and the game moves too fast to do that. You can get away with that in high school. And Landon, like you brought up before the podcast, you can get away with that in college because the game is slower. There's more breaks. But in the NBA, man, 3 minutes goes by fast. And I think about how when Christian Wood subbed out, it was a two-point game. By the time he subbed back in again, it was a five-point game with a minute 30 left to play. And so that defensive lineup, the defensive lineup with quotations around it that Kidd put in, actually led to New Orleans extending its lead. And to me, yeah, you got to read the moment. And that, like, if your team really needs a stop and you have a defensive stopper, that is one thing. But I don't think that this was the game for that. Where New Orleans lacked star power, they didn't have Zion, they didn't have Brandon Ingram, and all you had to do was generate enough good looks down the stretch, and the Mavs would probably win this game, despite how well C.J. McCollum played without him shooting well, but in terms of defense and playmaking, and despite how well Murphy, Sean Navaz's guy, was shooting the ball. And it always it confused me in that moment, because I was like, this just feels like a game where you roll with the guys that are getting you the best shots and you live with the result, versus trying to overthink the situation and saying, let me put Maxey in for defense for two possessions and then I'll go back to Wood. It, like you said, it felt too late, because by that point, you're already playing from behind and you have to start playing the foul game. And it's an unfortunate consequence, because even still, like, the Mavs got the miss they needed down the stretch. But, you know, Luka got to his left and, you know, missed a shot. But still, I mean, I don't think they'd be in that position if they just roll with their best bucket getters at that point.
Sean Navaz, what you think about the back and forth closing lineup?
Yeah, I mean, it's not every day that I agree with Ian on almost everything, but you know, this might
you
be
say
one of those.
That every podcast, but then you agree with him. What you mean?
He's a smart guy, man. I can't fault on him. And ever since he gave me props that first one, I gotta keep.
No,
I'm just trying to redeem myself, man, because these fans were coming for my throat for my preseason predictions, man. I'm trying to get back.
We can get into that later. We can get into how the Lakers are doing later. But you should
see Ian at American Airlines Center. He's looking over his shoulder every hallway he walks into.
I feel like I'm about to end up like Jordan Poole one of these days.
Oh my god. I'm more of an optimist. I think I get, at the end of the day, I understand everything that Ian is saying, and I agree with it. But to Ian's point that he made earlier, Jason Kidd is a very process driven head coach. And in his mind, if he has said, I'm going to evaluate how the first X number of games are going to go, that's how things are going to go. We saw this last year, right? We saw Mavs fans, we saw Mavs Twitter, we saw media calling for Jason Kidd's head at the end of the year in 2021 as we rolled into 2022. What happened in 2022? When this team figured out how to play defense, when this team finally bought into what Jason Kidd was preaching, they made the conference finals. They lost 12 games down the stretch. It takes time. It's game three. And Ian talks about our, you know, and Landon, you brought this up too, right? Our text messages back and forth. It's game three. It's super early, right? I mean, there's a lot of time to figure things out. Yes, it's not as long as baseball season, but in the NBA, 82 games is a lot, especially in a Western Conference where you've got a lot of teams that are going through load management, like the Clippers. You've got teams that are still missing key players like the Nuggets, who Michael Porter Jr. out again, right? I'm sure they're going to rest Jamal Murray quite a bit. Memphis is missing Jaren Jackson. New Orleans tonight was missing Brandon Ingram and Zion. Mavs, yes, they should have capitalized on it. But, you know, there's a lot of parity in the Western Conference. There's a lot of time for improvement. And I think you'll see that as the season goes on. Jason Kidd's already proven that once before. Let's give him the benefit of the doubt. Let's let him figure out the best rotation for this team. Should Christian Wood be in the final rotation in the fourth quarter? 100%. I think from our perspective, looking from the outside in, 100%. A guy who's averaging 25 a game and plays this well with Luka, 100%, should be on the floor at the end of the game. But maybe there's a reason why. Maybe there's a reason why he's not. Let's let Jason Kidd figure it out. We've seen him do it before. Let's give him the benefit of the doubt. And I will say this as well. We keep forgetting that the Mavericks are missing a very key piece of their offense as well, with Tim Hardaway Jr. out. Had Tim Hardaway Jr. played, hits a three or two, the Mavericks win this game, right? I mean, there's no telling whether he was going to be as hot as, you know, some of the Pelicans players were this game, right? There was a completely abnormal shooting night for that team as well, missing two of their best players. So who knows? I mean, injuries are a big part of the NBA. We've seen it a lot throughout the years. But at the end of the day, I want to give Jason Kidd the benefit of the doubt. I saw it last year. and I'll let him do his thing.
Are the Pelicans an all-time fun team to watch? Like, I don't think there's a team more fun to watch play basketball than that group of guys right now.
There's the fact that they've got guys, and we talked about this before the podcast, right? Jose Alvarado, who reminds me of JJ Barea, right? Just a scrappy, like, defender, really tiny guy, like, gets in your head. The thing he does where he runs around the court, like, you know, from the baseline trying to steal the ball and inbounds passes, like, really makes me angry, but it's such a smart thing that, like, nobody's ever thought of. And it blows my mind that he can do that with like, efficiency. And then, you know, Ian, we talked about this earlier, right? Trey Murphy. I mean, the guy shot 40% from three in college, and he's shooting 40% from three in the NBA right now. Like, it's mind-blowing the depth this team has, the way that they've been constructed. Even with Zion's injury last year, they were still a play-in team, arguably could have made the play. I mean, it's a very, very well-constructed team and a very fun team to watch.
And I love this version of CJ McCollum we're seeing as well. Like, because we always saw him play with Dame, right? And so I don't think we ever understood how good of a playmaker he actually is. Like, tonight he was carving up Dallas on some of these pick and rolls. Like, Dallas looked like it had no answer with those McCollum-Nance pick and rolls and Jonas Valanciunas and McCollum pick and rolls. Dallas had no answer at times, even with guys like...
And Herb Jones, man. Like, how do we forget about Herb Jones? Like, he was out for today, but, like, the guy is a great player. You know, a very, very underrated prospect came in and just completely dominated for the Pelicans last year. I mean, it's a good team. Devontae Graham off the bench, right? A guy that got relegated to bench duties. You know, he was 4 of 10, but Ian, you texted us, right? Like, he'll shoot his shot. You know, it doesn't matter. Still shot 50% from three this game. All four of his makes were from three.
Yeah, and I'm gonna tell y'all one guy who I'm highly on after just one game. After just one game of watching them, I'm gonna make sure I watch a lot of Pelicans games. But Dyson Daniels is a hooper. He is a hooper. I'm like, wow, this dude does everything. He can score. He can defend. He was defending Luka really well. He can do it all. He has the offensive game and the defensive game. I want to see him grow. But just getting back to the Mavs, before we get into that topic, why is it this or that? Why can't the Mavs play Christian Wood and Maxey in the closing lineup? So you get both. You get offense and defense. Is that so far-fetched? Why not just test it out and see what Luka, Reggie, Dorian, Maxey, and Wood would look like? Is that far-fetched?
Well, I'll go first if you don't mind on that. I think I would much rather see, if you're talking about a closing lineup, I'd much rather see Spencer out there than Reggie at this point, to be honest. I mean, I think we've, you know, we saw Spencer is we saw what he did tonight, right? 24 points, you know, was 4 of 8 from three, 4 of 5 from the free throw line. I mean, Spencer's really coming into his own. I think second, you know, you talk about, you know, those additional years off of ACL injuries and what it's done for players. Spencer's really coming into his own in terms of the new environment with Dallas. This is going to be finally his, you know, first full year off of, you know, the ACL injury and coming into, you know, he's finally getting acclimated into the system. But man, Reggie Bullock is one of the streakiest shooters I think I've ever seen in my life. I mean, guy, like, you look at the playoffs last year, I mean, there were games where he couldn't hit anything, you know, and there was games where he was going 6 of 8, 6 of 9 from the field. I'd much rather have a lineup out there where it's Luke. If you're talking about a closing lineup, Landon, last 5 minutes of the game, give me Luka, Dinwiddie, Dorian, Kleba, and Wood. I think that closing lineup could rival a lot of teams in the NBA because you've got legitimate three-point shooters all around. You've got two solid ball handlers, a guy in Christian Wood who can also handle the ball as a big man, and then two really solid on-ball defenders in Maxey and Dorian, right? So I think you open it up. you open up the offense a little bit more, but you're still keeping that that defensive presence as well.
Yeah, you want to see something. It doesn't have to be Spencer. It could be Reggie. You at least want to see it during the game and see what it looks like.
I don't think it's far-fetched at all. I think that maybe we'll see that in the next close game that Dallas plays. To me, all it's glaring is that something does need to change. To Sean Navaz's point, when Reggie is missing, I do wonder his overall value as a player in the lineup and as a mainstay, because, you know, especially on nights where Hardaway isn't available because of foot soreness or whatever it may be, his lack of shot ability or shot making when it's not a wide open catch and shoot is pretty glaring. There was a point in the game where he caught a pass and got ran off the 3-point line, and his runner just looked like it had absolutely no chance.
Even the broadcasters were like, "That's not his game. Like, that's what is he doing?"
And it's quite fascinating to watch when you're seeing a guy that can have these spells, like you said, that goes 6-for-9 from 3, and then he'll have a game where he's 0-for-9, and there's never any consistency or levelness in his shot. So with the Maxi and Wood lineups, I'd honestly like to see it. I'd like to see a lineup that's Luka, Spencer, Maxi, Wood, and Dorian. And why not give that a go? See what happens there. And at least like experiment with closing games that way. Because I do think you get negative returns when you play Reggie over 30 minutes a night. I don't think that he is a 35-minute-plus player unless he is shooting the leather off the basketball.
Well, speaking of lineups, make sure y'all line up and check out Chop Shop Victory Park in Dallas, right outside the AAC. Great food and great drinks. We worked out a deal with them for drinks for MFFLs during Mavericks home and road games, not just home, but also road games. Make sure y'all watch those games at Chop Shop Victory Park. $5 Mav shots, $5 Big German from Roller Town. They're usually $9 plus, so basically half off drinks. While you eat your pastrami melts and trash can nachos, I've had both, really good. I recommend them. Chop Shop Victory Park in Dallas. That leads us to the next topic, overall depth on this team, because when you look at Hardaway's two games, I mean, he's shooting 30% from the field and 27% from three. I mean, and then you have Josh Green. He's only attempted 3 shots in the first 3 games. I think Kidd's also trying to find at least one score off the bench, because if you have Wood sub for Reggie and then at least Maxi, I mean, who's coming off the bench? THJ is your only true scorer off the bench, and he's inconsistent. So that would be tough where the Mavs need some stability on that bench.
100%. I mean, I think the Mavs are lacking in depth in terms of when you look at other Western Conference opponents are. Let's not even bring up the Eastern Conference, but you look at the team they just played, right? The Pelicans are losing or have lost three of their best players did not play this game, and they still won. They put up 40 points in the first quarter. They shot 58% from the field and almost 45% from three, which, by the way, is not sustainable, right? So a loss is a loss, and the fact that you only lost by 2, it's, you know, and it's game 3. I've talked about that. It's okay. But you look at the depth the team, like, New Orleans has, where, you know, you've got guys like Devontae Graham, you've got guys like Dyson Daniels, Larry Nance Jr. coming off the bench, right, giving you 11 points, you know, and then your starting lineup, guys that would not be starting normally. Trey Murphy is a bench player for this team. Jose Alvarado is a bench player. Najee Marshall is a bench player. 15, those three guys combined for like 35 points in the starting lineup. I mean, that's, you're talking about guys that normally play off the bench. Can you imagine if Zion and Brendan Ingram were playing this game? I mean, Would it have been would it have been a complete blowout with the Mavs have played defensively better, scheming with those? We don't know, but depth is a big piece in the NBA, especially during the regular season, right? In the playoffs, yes, you play your best players. But the Mavericks play every regular season game, it feels like it's the playoffs, where you've got five guys that are playing 35, 38 minutes, and then three guys that are playing 15 minutes. And it's infuriating sometimes because you need that depth. When Luka goes down, when Dinwiddie goes down, if somebody needs a rest, needs a day off, you've got to have people off the bench that can come in and sub in and get you those key wins that make sure you don't finish fifth in the West by a half a game, as opposed to fourth in the West by three games, and you get home court against that fifth seed team, right? I mean, that makes a big difference. So when you're rolling out Josh Green off the bench or Campazzo, who is Ian's favorite player now, off the bench, you know, it's not ideal, right? And we've talked about this ad nauseum. The Mavericks need depth pieces, and I'm a firm believer that they will make a deal. I think there is a deal to be made. They've got enough financially movable contracts that I think they are going to explore the trade market, and we'll see this roster look very different come January. But for the time being, the Mavericks are sorely lacking in depth. They might be one of the worst rosters in terms of overall depth in the Western Conference.
Ian, what's your thoughts on just the bench of the Mavericks?
Man, the amount of hate I had in my mentions when I said that the Mavs feel like an eighth seed team to me in this Western Conference, as though it was a slight against the Mavs. I think it was people missing the point. My whole premise for feeling like the Mavs would be at eighth, seventh play-in team range was because unless they make that move that Sean Navaz is talking about, it's unsustainable to play 82 games like they are the NBA playoffs, where you can only go seven deep and still be competitive. And you to be a good team, to especially in the West, where teams got better this summer just by virtue of their guys getting healthy, you have to be able to go 9-10 deep and still have serviceable players. Because New Orleans was a play-in team, got to the playoffs last year, play-in team, and they didn't make any outrageous moves this summer. But their internal pieces got better. And Dallas had the best player on the floor tonight and lost. And yeah, the shooting numbers are a bit wonky. But to me, it's not like a hit the panic button freak out. But it's just a nice reminder of reality for the Dallas Mavericks that you need depth to win in the regular season in this league. And if you're going to ask Luka to play 38, 39 minutes a night just to be competitive, that's not sustainable, as good as Luka may be. That's just not sustainable.
That's one of the reasons why you see him get gassed at the end of the season, because they drive a Luka bus, you know. They go as he goes, and the offense is Luka-centric. And just as the season goes on, it's a long season. 82 games plus playoffs, that's a long season for these guys to be playing high 30s. And like Sean Navas says, in game three. That's crazy to me, because you see across the league, you know, I know we all on this podcast watch different games, watching different game while we're recording this, and you see other teams use their whole bench, and not just like every single person on the bench, but they go five deep, and they play good minutes, and then as you see the season goes on, that's when you start seeing the rotations tighten up and teams preparing for the playoffs or preparing for the lottery. But another question with this is it because we expected or we saw something in training camp and preseason that we're not seeing now, and that goes to Josh Green. Josh Green in training camp and preseason, like, he was impressive. Like, he stood out and practiced. He got the ball. He was scoring on the starters. He was driving through the hole. He was shooting threes. And then you see the season start, and it's back to last season, Josh Green. He's not shooting when he gets the ball. He's only shot three shots this season. It's been three games. And you just want to see some progression with him in year three. We thought this was the year. I thought personally this was going to be a big year for him, just individually, not going crazy, but I said 10 points with 3 rebounds, 3 assists, and he's averaging 2 points, 2 rebounds, what, one assist, 0.3 steals. What's your thoughts on Josh Green and how he's played in the season versus how he was in training camp and preseason?
Man, I think the Mavs have been patient with Josh Green, more patient than I ever would have been. But it's because of the talent. Like, how many times have we seen a Josh Green game where you're like, oh, he looked kind of spicy today. He was pushing the ball. He was pushing the ball, finding guys, getting to the rim. But at this point, it's almost like a mental thing, because
hold on, Ian. What's your version of spicy? What are you talking about when you say spicy?
Hey, man,
what's your favorite hot sauce? What are we talking about?
I'm a basic Tabasco guy. I put Tabasco on the egg. On the egg.
I thought you said Cholula. I thought you was a Cholula guy.
Yeah. Well, Cholula, if I'm going out to brunch, like if I'm feeling like a bottomless mimosa type of day.
Oh, okay.
But no, but to the point of Josh Green, I think it's a mental thing. He has all the physical tools, and we saw it in training camp. He looked like a different player. But when the bright lights turn on, man, you got to perform. And sometimes you people can't. There's a saying that I have, the world doesn't know truly its greatest artists. And the reason is that oftentimes the people that have the most talent in the world kind of buckle up when the pressure gets tight, when the lights are really bright and it gets kind of sweaty. And the world doesn't know its greatest artists. It just knows the ones that are willing to attempt and fail and attempt again. And I wouldn't be mad if Josh Green was shooting 32% from the field if he was taking 7-8 shots and just trying stuff. It's the fact that he's taken 3 shots in 3 games that's where it's like my personal patience wears thin, and that what are you out there doing other than getting cardio at this point?
Sean Navaz, what's your thoughts on Josh Green, how he's played in the season versus the expectations we all had for him?
I mean, this every time we talk about Josh Green, it goes back to the, you know, the terrible draft and not being able to get guys like Desmond Bane and, you know, on this roster, Sadiq Bey. I mean, but Josh Green coming out of Arizona was a solid defender, right? A guy who could knock down a couple threes. And I think people were in, there was an enticing kind of aura about Josh Green, right? And like Ian and you Landon mentioned in preseason and training camp, I mean, there was some semi-hype regarding Josh Green. I wonder if it's a trust factor, not necessarily just a mental, because I agree with Ian on that I think he might be in his own head at this point. But I think it might be a trust factor between the coaching staff and between himself, right? I don't think he trusts himself, and I don't know if Jason Kidd and this coaching staff trust him to be that guy that we all want him to be, right?
He's playing like 16 minutes a game. I mean, he has all the opportunities.
But you see him hesitate on taking shots, right? When he misses a shot, it's the same thing as last year, right? He'll miss a wide open shot, and it's, you know, he now he'll get the ball and he looks hesitant. He'll pass the ball away. some of the things I saw today were very encouraging. He had that. It was a really bad pass. I think it was Campazzo. He passed the ball to him, and Green went back for it and made the layup. I mean, great athletic play. That's what you want to see, right? You want to see that athletic ability that Josh Green has. But until he kind of harnesses that and kind of he has to look within himself and say, I gotta prove it to myself and I gotta prove it to the coaching staff that I belong. Because if not, he's either gonna get cut or he's gonna get traded for nothing. Right? He might be a throw-in in a trade for some other team that he could be one of those change of scenery guys, right? Where some other team can give him a shot. I mean, we've seen that happen across the league numerous times. So I think he's got to get it within himself to understand that I've got to really do this. But I think it's also on the Mavericks to put him in better positions to succeed as well, right? Not just, you know, playing him 13 – well, he played, what, 14 minutes today? I mean, you played Reggie Bullock 35 minutes. You could have split that up a little bit, right? I mean, if Reggie Bullock is 1 of 8 from the field and 1 of 6 from 3, give Josh Green a little bit more run. You know, if Jason Kidd decides to change the lineups later on, start Josh Green at the shooting guard, see what happens, right? He's a good on-ball defender. Maybe start him against, you know, a weaker team than the Mavericks and give him a chance to build that confidence, because right now it doesn't seem like he has any.
It's kind of disappointed, you know, because when we, on this podcast, all put our lineups together, what we would have as our starting five, I had him at the starting shooting guard. And the reason I had him there was because he didn't have to do much. If you put, it's like right now you feel like you want to see him do something because he's on that second string and he's on that bench where, you know, they expect more from those type of guys to come right in and give some energy, give some scoring production and keep the lead up or try to catch up and grab the lead. And I feel like with the starters, when you see him with Luka, it makes him a better player, and it makes the game easier for him. And I feel like it would have been best to have him, that type of player, with surrounded by Luka and Christian Wood, so he can just go in there and, you know, grab rebounds. He can shoot open threes when he catches the ball. He can slash and get those passes to the rim from Luka and some of those crafty dimes that he throws. And now when you think about it, I don't even know if he should be playing the minutes that he's playing right now. I mean, yeah, he's getting some nice hustle plays, but I'm starting to think they need a trade. Like, I know it's game three, but you can't have Reggie Bullock and both of y'all said it. You can't have Reggie Bullock and Dorian Finney-Smith playing 35 minutes in game three. That's ridiculous. I mean, it's an 82 game season and you're expecting to make the playoffs. It is. You got it. I know, and you have to have a backup wing that can play 20 minutes a game or 18 that can give those guys a breather, cuz you're running them in the ground, and that's, we saw in playoffs, it eventually catches up to you. And it did in the Warriors series. Obviously, they're a more talented team, but you saw there was a difference in energy. So, Sean Avaz, what do you think? Just like I asked with JaVale McGee, how long is the leash? Because they picked up his option. He's here for another year. So, but how long is the leash? When are you, as a spectator, saying, okay, we need somebody else, or hey, let's give him 30 games. I mean, what is your thoughts on how long the leash is for
Josh Green? I'd give him till probably December, right? I mean, I give him, but again, Landon, I go back to you got to put him in a position to succeed. You got to see what he can do, and you talked about it. Play him with Luka more, right? Luka makes everybody around him better. Right, like play him alongside Luka Doncic more and see what the kid can do. Right, you're playing him off the bench now. You're staggering his minutes with guys like Dinwiddie, who is not obviously the distributor that Luka is. You're playing him alongside guys with like Reggie Bullock and Dorian. Put him next to Luka as a starting guard for a couple of games, right? You've got games against the Magic, the Wizards, the Rockets coming up, right? Teams that are not good or tanking. They're in the Wembanyama sweepstakes. Just play him, give him a shot, right? Let's see what he can do. Put him in a position to succeed. If he can't, then you know that at this point, okay, it's a lost cause. You cut your losses and see what you can get for him. If he does succeed, maybe you, A, get a better trade value for him, or you realize he's a piece of the future.
Ian, what's your thought? How long is your leash for Josh Green in the rotation?
Josh Green is on borrowed time, in my opinion.
Dang, borrowed time, huh?
Because
Ian,
it's to the point I feel like I'm watching a Lifetime movie where the title says the ending, but I'm still stuck here watching it, waiting for it to end. It'll be like, the babysitter did it. And then I'm still here just watching, like, oh, what's going to happen? No, I know exactly what's going to happen. Josh Green is not going to be on this team in 2 years.
Whoa.
And when we're doing this podcast,
may not be 6 months.
Whoa. Look, man, and y'all can trace it back to right here, right now. I just don't think he is a very good NBA player. And that happens. Some guys, they have all the athleticism. They know what to do. Like, if I'm sure if we broke down game film with Josh Green, he would know what to do 100% of the time. But for some reason, it doesn't translate to in-game. It's the similar frustration I have with Justin Fields, like, as a quarterback, to draw those comparisons. It's like Justin Fields knows the right reads to make. He's just so slow at doing it that he never makes the play, even though he knew what the right play was. And I feel like that's the same thing with Josh Green. I've never seen someone so athletically fast but slow thinking on the basketball court, where he's either playing hot potato with the ball, turning it over, or too scared to shoot. So the leash for me is borrowed time. I need to see something yesterday if I'm going to believe anything about who he is as a player.
So that brings us to another key player off the bench. I feel like we shouldn't even talk about Christian Wood because, I mean, he's the second best player on this team, let's be real. But going to another key player on the bench, Tim Hardaway Jr. Sean Navaz, what's your thoughts on the inconsistency in the first two games and then health concerns again on his foot? I mean, he was out this game. It doesn't look to be serious, but it is concerning. It is troubling that the first two games you get inconsistency, and then the third game he's out.
Yeah, I mean, it's 100% concerning. I think the Mavericks hopefully are just trying to be careful with him. I think he can add a much needed piece to this team. I think he can add scoring off the bench. We talked about what he could have added in the Golden State series. You know, could the Mavs have won that series? Probably not, but would it have been closer than it was? Potentially. Tim Hardaway Jr. has always been a streaky shooter, and he's always been a guy that, because of his contract and because of the fact that he is so streaky and can get on these really, really good runs, can help potential playoff teams. So we've heard numerous times of his name in trade rumors, and I have no doubt that we'll hear that again. You know, we heard last year at the deadline the Mavs were looking to move him. I think he's coming off a foot injury. He really doesn't have a stronghold in Jason Kidd's system. I mean, he only played, 3 months, under Jason Kidd before he had the foot injury and then missed the rest of the year. I'm excited. You know, I know we talked before the season started. I'm excited to see what Hardaway can bring off the bench. I think he's a welcomed addition to this team. Will he be here by the end of the year? Will he be here in February past the trade deadline? I don't know. But I think for the type of player that he is, a guy that can get hot at the right time, I think he potentially is a much needed addition, especially when you talk about the lack of depth on this team and the fact that the Mavericks need scoring off the bench.
Ian, are you concerned with Tim Hardaway's start so far with the inconsistency and then missing a game with the foot?
Am I concerned? I'm like the meme that's the dog sitting in the house on fire saying it's fine. Because all training camp, Tim Hardaway Jr. told us, Landon, that he was a different player, that he was taking training camp more seriously, that him coming back was like the Mavs getting an off-season addition. And I want to know, when will he start living up to his $15-plus million salary annually? Because it's disappointing. I'm in Tim Hardaway Jr.'s corner, and I'm curious to see your guys' thoughts on this. He feels like a guy that was a Rick Carlisle player. And when Kidd came in, changed everything, Hardaway's been trying to find his footing, no pun intended. And it seems weird to say, but in the two games that he has played in, it's like the Mavs desperately need what he brings theoretically, but I also feel like he's also not needed on this version of the Mavs, like him. But the player like Tim Hardaway theoretically makes sense with the team. And it's a weird dichotomy because I'm like, man, like if the Mavs just had a guy that is capable of going off for 25 plus on any given night off the bench, that'd be grand. But then when Tim Hardaway Jr. trots out there, I'm also like, well, not him either. and so it's like he's one of those guys that theoretically you fit in here, but I don't think you fit in culturally anymore. In the sense that you know your role, you know exactly what to bring to the table. And I think him getting hurt when the Mavs started playing better last year only contributed to that effect, where now he's coming into a locker room that won without him. And you were supposed to be like this veteran voice, and they won without you. And what does that pose mentally for a guy that's coming off of a foot injury that hasn't played up to his monumental extension either? And so I think he's battling those things, and he's just – he doesn't fit in Dallas. He doesn't make sense in Dallas, personally, for me.
But I think the Mavs realize that, right? I think you saw that when Kidd took him out of the starting lineup last year, you know, and put in Jalen Brunson, and I think you saw that when the Mavs were fielding trade offers for him, right? You know, there was – he clearly was on the block. There was no – if, ands, or buts about that. And then he got hurt, right? I think he probably would have been traded last year had he not gotten injured. So I agree with that to a point, right, where does he fit with this Jason Kidd style of team? No, right? The concept of a guy that can come off the bench, like Ian said, and hit seven, just shoot 16 threes, you know, off the bench and hit six or seven of them. I mean, that's ideally what the Mavericks need, right? Just a catch-and-shoot guy that can, you know, come off the bench and provide that spark off on offense. But for right now, that's what you have, right? Nobody's going to trade for Tim Hardaway Jr., you know, coming off his foot injury. He's got to prove himself as well. And I think he can, right? I think he'll be put in a position, especially when he, you know, the de facto best scoring option off the bench alongside Christian Wood. I think he's going to get the opportunity to play alongside guys, especially in the second unit with Dinwiddie at point, where he can take those shots. And if he catches fire, which we've seen before, you know, he'll start averaging more and more. He'll average 15 to 20 a game. And I think as you get towards the trading deadline, you're going to start to see the Mavs take more trade calls on him.
Man, Tim Hardaway Jr. pre-contract and post-contract is like sweet potato casserole versus green bean casserole. both are casseroles. One is clearly better than the other.
But isn't that like most players in the league? I mean, that's who are not stars. Don't you see? I mean, at least 50% of the time, they're not living up to that contract.
Well, and technically, didn't Tim Hardaway Jr. take less money to stay with Dallas? Right? Didn't New Orleans offer him like what was it, like $8 or $10 million more, and he chose to stay with Dallas because he loved the culture, he loved playing alongside Luka, things like that. So let's not forget that there were other teams that were willing to offer him a lot more money than Dallas was.
Yeah. Well, they definitely need it. I mean, they definitely need him to be healthy first and then obviously start making shots and keep that energy on defense. Just as the team looks ahead, they're 1-2. Ian, what are you looking for in the game tomorrow night against the Brooklyn Nets?
Healthy, hearty dose of effort, coming out with a willingness to defend. I mean, you saw New Orleans absolutely thrash Dallas in the paint in the first half. So if they can come out and be willing to defend and actually give effort there, I'll feel more encouraged by the trend this team is on. But stopping KD and Kyrie, who both went off against the Grizzlies, should be fairly interesting. And trying to figure out a game plan for slowing those boys down. So I'll also be looking at that. Like, what does Dallas do when it plays a supernova superstar? Because those are oftentimes the guys you got to get through to win a championship.
Sean Navaz, what are you looking for in the game against the Nets?
Yeah, I mean, this was a thrilling game last year when they played. And I think that was the game, if I'm not mistaken, that Dinwiddie hit that game-winning shot. Luka passed off to him. It was like one of the first games he played with Dallas. The Nets, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, have one of the worst, if not the worst, defensive rating, and they keep playing Nick Claxton and Ben Simmons together. I want to see the Mavericks take advantage of it. You know, I want to see the Mavericks drive the paint, take advantage of the defensive inefficiencies of the Nets. And I fully expect Luka to have another 30-point game. And I want to see Tim Hardaway Jr. come off the bench and put up, you know, get some hot shooting in there. I think the Mavs can win this game. You know, they've typically let KD kind of work on his own, and they've defended other players well. The Nets do have a good roster, but I think they have some defensive limitations that the Mavs can exploit. So I really want to see Jason Kidd utilize his team to really take advantage of that.
Yeah, and I'm looking for two things. Most importantly, I want to see how Dorian and Reggie play defense on KD and Kyrie, because now Kyrie is playing in this game. He can play in Brooklyn, so see how they do against those two players, those supernova, you know, star players like Ian said. And then also the first quarter, I do not want to see a team giving up 40 points in the first quarter. And that was to the Pelicans without Zion and without Ingram. I mean, you're running into KD and Kyrie, who can get 20 each in the first quarter easily. So definitely want to see how they do against them individually and then against the team in the first quarter. So as that concludes this episode, the Mavericks are 1-2. They head into Brooklyn tomorrow, and they have the Oklahoma City Thunder on Saturday. Final words, Sean Navaz.
Let's go Mavs. Put Christian Wood in the starting lineup, Jason Kidd.
Ian, final words.
Man, they need to get our girl Brittany Griner home, man. I was reading that story, and really just breaks my heart, man. So just hopefully they can figure something out.
Many prayers go out to Brittany Griner and BG's family as well.
Also, can I say one thing, Landon? Vote, early voting started. Get out there and vote, everybody.
Yeah, agree.
Whatever your political affiliation is, get out there and vote.
Is that a fork in your hand?
That's a back scratcher.
No comment.
Dude, goodbye, I'm telling everyone. You, man.
Goodbye.